And in my hand, I have a first-gen Fold, and I have the Fold 2. And I'm not going to call it the Galaxy Z Fold 2 if you think the name is stupid. I'm just going to call it the Fold 2. Just getting that part out of the way before people yell at me that I pronounced it wrong or said it wrong. I think, and if you are the most hardcore iOS Apple fanboy, this phone is such a marvel of engineering and execution that any fan of technology should be cheering for it to be a success. Even if people choose to not spend their money on it, because it is very expensive and still not for everybody. But it is one of those few devices that I think the price justifies what it does. I can see why it costs $2,000 or less if you decide to trade it in. It is very expensive, and I think the price will ultimately come down. But the original promise of the Fold, of being able to have a usable outside screen and open it up and have a tablet experience, is finally realized.
Welcome to Geared Up, brought to you by National Car Rental. I'm Andrew Edwards.
I'm John Rettinger.
Geared Up is your weekly look at the world of consumer electronics and gadgets. And this week, John, actually, let me welcome you back. You weren't here last week.
I was going to say, my first question that I had for you was, did you miss me?
I did miss you. Obviously, very big shoes to fill. But Jenna Ezarik stepped in and actually did the job quite well last week.
That's fair. She is so talented and experienced. So shout out to her. If anybody was going to fill my shoes, I'm glad it was her.
She did it. But this week, we have a man who can easily fill the shoes of best guest we've ever had.
Needs no introduction.
Right. I don't even know why I'm doing this. But Thunder E, Enabong, Mr. Board at Work, how are you doing today?
I am good. Thank you, guys. That was a very verbose introduction.
Listen, we love you, and we're happy that you're on. And happy birthday, I believe, belated birthday to your lovely mother, who I think just celebrated her birthday a couple days ago.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Now, listen, before we get into the news, for anyone out there who listens to our show who is not aware of the Board at Work brand and what you do, tell us a little bit about you, your channel, etc.
Okay, Board at Work, let's see, started it a few years back, about 11 years ago. It's been a while, but started off as a website, then, you know, saw guys like John, and I figured I could do the YouTube thing too, you know. So again, I've never told you this, but you're one of the early inspirations way back.
Thank you, man.
Appreciate you putting stuff out there and just challenging. So yeah, we moved to YouTube, and I'd like to cover a lot of tech alongside gaming. So a lot of my videos are revolved around gaming with tech, which I think a lot of people do know, especially with mobile gaming. And we've got new consoles coming out as well. So for me, it's a lot of that. And then there's a other half of me that has a certain African dictator side, Colonel Singala, who tends to come out once in a while. So I tend to have some
videos.
I like how you
mentioned, just there's an African dictator side of me. Like that's
right.
It's not something that is like generally heard on YouTube here.
No, it's not.
We need to have him on the show.
Yeah, you could have him on the show, though. I mean, he will be drinking quite a lot. I'm just going to let you know. Full warning, full disclosure ahead of time.
All right. So check him out. Board at Work. Board at Work with two O's.
Yes.
Not one. So it's basically Board at Work.
Hey. It's just Bored. You know, it's like an elongated.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Just want the people to be able to spell it when they go and try to find you.
Yeah.
But nice lead in. As you said, you do a lot of tech, do a lot of gaming. The first topic that we're covering this week, and we've covered this several times, but it's, like I said last week, the launch of a new console generation only comes around every 8 to 10 years. This is not something that happens every year or two. Mm-hmm. And so as we have different guests on the show, we like to talk about this because it's a big shift in the world of gaming, which is one of, if not the largest money-generating entertainment avenues out there. So Xbox Series X is coming. PlayStation 5 is coming. We don't have dates. We don't have prices. We have rumors. But for you in particular, Thunder E, which is what he likes to go by the way. Thunder E, tell us how you're feeling about the upcoming console. I don't even know if it's going to be a war, but console generation.
I'm excited because I've been a PC gamer for the longest time, and this is now where it comes, console games gets really close to PC games, just in terms of graphics, specs, all that fun stuff. But in terms of launch dates, we do know when it's going to launch. It's going to launch before Black Friday. Everything, it's always launches in November. It's usually a week or two before Black Friday. So just pencil that down. Price, we don't know yet, but most likely it's between $500 and $600. I mean, if it's anything more, it's just not going to make sense. But I am excited. I am excited because Sony's doing what Sony does best, right? Which is showing us they've got first-party titles. It's exciting. Yeah. They've got games up the wazoo. And Microsoft has taken a page from Nintendo, which a lot of people have not realized is they've taken the blue ocean approach. We're not going to be number one by just trying to be number one. We're going to be the number two console you get or the number two service that you get, which means we become number one. And, you know, with Game Pass, the two different SKUs of Xbox, this one's supposed to be really cheap according to rumors, and then the Series X, you know, the fact that you can play it on all your Xbox games on PC as well. So I like that approach because in our field, we get to play with a lot of tech. So a lot of times we go, yeah, whatever you want to pick, because we have access to a PlayStation or an Xbox. Most people don't. So I like the fact that they're giving that kind of opportunity to people out there.
And I think kind of jumping off of what you just said, like we're going to be number two, which would allow us to then be number one. It makes sense because the reason why I said at the start, I wouldn't really call it a console war this generation is because typically in the past, we had all this hardware, Sony, Microsoft, Nintendo, the main three players, and then whoever sold the most hardware would be considered to be the winner of that generation. And in addition, whoever sold the most hardware, the developers of the games would typically focus the game on optimizing for what was in the most households and then port over for the other consoles. But what's different now is if Microsoft has more Game Pass subscribers than PlayStation 5 has purchasers, then even if there are more PlayStation 5s out there than Xboxes, there are still more people on Xbox's service, which would mean that the game developers would focus more on Xbox as the primary platform, even if Sony outsells the Xbox hardware. And this is a very unique...
Yeah.
We've never been in this situation before, so it's just super interesting.
It definitely is. I think it's one of those where consumers are not exactly sure where it stands because still the whole rhetoric of like, what console are you picking up? Who's going to be the market leader? But I think even with the launch, what I noticed with the launch of the Galaxy Note 20 Ultra and the first video I did, of course, was a gaming video, but I spent half of my gaming on Xbox Game Pass. And a lot of people were like, was that really the Xbox games or was that something? I was like, yeah, it's streaming. You can play it on there. And people are finding out that, okay, I can do that. And you think about it, there's a generation shift or change that this whole environment with COVID showed us. So during COVID, we saw that TV sales went up. The reason why is because most of those people were initially watching content on their smartphones or tablets, not necessarily on the TVs. So because now you're at home, you have more time to spend in front of a TV. But because people are watching content on smartphones and tablets, Microsoft realized, well, why don't you just game right there and game the way you want? And that comes into play with how Apple is looking at things also with Xbox Game Pass. It's not going to be on the iPhone, at least as of yet for now. Because, that also is going to eat into their revenue. If there are more and more users who are iPhone users who have Game Pass, they're buying less games. They're just buying one service, right? So those are the things that I think are going to change the industry. It's kind of the same way Netflix came in and everybody was like, nah, we don't think so. And then I think really COVID was the crowning jewel for Netflix to say, this is why we're here. This is why we're prepared. And I think it's the same way for Microsoft. At least their thinking is that we are going to be in the same boat in the gaming industry.
Yeah. So one thing that I've noticed about people in our industry, like you said, people who have multiple consoles because they cover games or they just like them, whatever you want to call it, or hardcore gamers too. If you have multiple consoles, people kind of look past what Game Pass really is and really allows you to do. And one thing that my son actually told me, so my son is 16 years old, he's in high school. If a new game comes out that the kids want to play. Let's just say a new Halo game or a new Gears of War, whatever it might be. If you want to play that game with your friends, every one of them needs to spend $60 plus tax in order for you all to play. So if you have four people, like you plus three others that you want to play with, every one of them needs to buy or somehow rent this game. But with Game Pass, if you have a subscription, on day one, everybody can just get together and play. You don't have to worry about spending extra money. And hardcore gamers don't realize that convenience. There are some people out there who can't afford $60 to $70 every time a big title drops that they want to play with their friends. With Game Pass, if it's included on there, and all first-party Microsoft games will be, you just have it day one at no extra charge.
But like the big caveat with that, though, is not every game is going to be on there. Now, you said Microsoft first-party, and not there at launch. I mean, so it's people have to pick and choose what games they want to play if they want to sort of go with the Game Pass streaming aspect of like their only catalog of games.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. I think from what Microsoft said is, well, they said all their first-party games will be there at launch. So if it comes out, you know, Halo comes out today, you get it same time on Game Pass. But the other half of what the rumors are saying, which I think would lend to Game Pass, is that the more powerful console and the easier console to develop for is the Xbox, because it's very PC-like in terms of architecture.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then it's easier for you to have it on Xbox, which means it's also one step closer to being on Game Pass. And one of the things I heard from Microsoft, it was not a direct quote, but the mentality of what they were trying to say was, we will try and get all the third-party games on Game Pass. It may not stay there forever. It's going to be like Netflix. It comes for 3 months or 6 months and then leaves. Yeah. But then we become the house for third-party games. Like, yeah, we can never compete with Sony for The Last of Us, God of War, Spider-Man. They own those properties, right? But when you want to play Assassin's Creed, why pay $60 when you have it for $15? Or whatever title that is like that. So I like that thinking. Again, it's all about execution, which Microsoft is always hit or miss. If it's the Surface team, it's a hit. Other teams, it's always here or there. So it's all about execution for them.
So we've actually been focusing on Xbox. I'm most excited about the Xbox launch. Is it safe to say you guys are in the same boat?
Yeah, definitely.
I think so.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously PlayStation 5 is going, I don't know obviously, but it seems like PlayStation 5 is poised to outsell, unless John's prediction comes true, which I still...
Wait, what was John's prediction?
I still enjoyed hearing.
So I did a video on this and got just shredded by the audience. I mean, just like wrecked. Now, most of it was emotional. It wasn't much in the way of like actual like factual rebuttals. Yep. But I went through and essentially talked about Microsoft's historical tolerance for write-offs and how they're willing to write off $2 billion for Nokia and these other sort of non-core verticals. They'll just write off. I go, well, why wouldn't they learn from past consoles and take a huge write-off on the first year or two of Xbox Series X, sell it for significantly less than the PlayStation? In fact, we went through and did the research on their market cap and available cash, and I believe the difference between available cash on hand between Microsoft and Sony was equal to 5.5 Jeff Bezos's. That's how we sort of gauged the amount of net worth and cash available between the two. So that's interesting. But also what I found interesting about the PlayStation 5, there seems to be a lot of similarities to PlayStation 3. It was a much more powerful console than Xbox 360. I mean, and it wasn't even close. And it was so powerful, and it was using a lot of new languages and new technologies that developers had a hard time taking advantage of it. And so when they were doing cross-platform game coding, they weren't really taking advantage of what the console could do until late stages of the PlayStation 3. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really new things in PlayStation 5 that's very similar stuff with some of the sound coding they're doing, some of the visual stuff, especially when it comes to the SSDs that you're using, as far as sort of rendering happening in real time. So you don't have to like, you know, wait on a splash screen to turn a corner. That sort of has the same hallmarks of what happened with the PlayStation 3. It's so powerful, it can do so much. It remains to be seen if developers want to commit to essentially developing the same game, but putting more development time towards Sony's side, as opposed to just cross-platform developing like they've always done.
Okay. I mean, I agree to kind of half of your sentiment, especially the side of write-offs. Microsoft is very good at putting that checkbook out and saying like, you know what, just forget this aspect. you know, we'll pay it off and we'll move forward. But you, I think you're right, though. I think they will sell it at a decent loss. There was a chip conference, which Microsoft actually laid out the full details of the Xbox Series X chipset. Digital Foundry actually did a detailed video on it. Really good if anyone wants to go check it out. And by the time he went through the video, he was like, this processor is not cheap. That's literally just all he said.
Yeah, of course.
And if you even think about it, the way he classified it in terms of performance, he said it's equivalent to a 2070. And a 2070 currently is $400. So if the GPU there is just that price, forget everything else. It's already more than $600 for,
absolutely,
for the whole thing. So they're definitely writing off some of that cost for the system. But the other thing he mentioned was that there's a classification of the chipset that it is server grade. And word is that Microsoft is upgrading servers for Xbox Game Pass Cloud. Those servers will be run by Xbox Series X machines. So again, even if they don't sell as much, it has usefulness, and it has usefulness across the board for them. So they're looking at this as, as, you know, a chess game and not just pure checkers of hardware, and we're, you know, we're just going to eat our way through. So I definitely agree on on that point. I think on the PlayStation side, in terms of, actually, you know what? I agree with you about 75%. Now that I'm calculating, okay, it's like warming up, because some of the language things in terms of like what Sony's doing and the rumors I've seen, some of the stuff I've read is that it's not that it's hard, but it will affect that first year, at least first or second year development cycle. But the funny thing is that with all that stuff, it's still not even as powerful as the Xbox Series X in terms of just pure compute and what it gives out. It might load things a little bit faster, but that's, from all developers, they said that's pretty much it, you know, in terms of difference. So yeah, you know what? I'm going to move to 80%. 80%, I'm with you with that one. I went from like, to 25 and then like 80. Yeah.
Yeah. And the one aspect that we don't know is the Xbox Series S, which we did see confirmed on a leaked controller that someone was able to buy on OfferUp. They bought an Xbox Series X controller, which on the side of the box also said works with Series S. So we know there's a cheaper console launching as well. Microsoft has not officially announced it yet, and we don't have a price, but that could be their super cheap entryway into combating the PlayStation 5. So, all right, one more rant. I feel like, you know what, I've ranted the last 2 weeks, so I'm gonna just throw this over to Enobong right now. We were talking about Game Pass on iOS and how Apple is not allowing it on their platform yet.
Mm-hmm.
How does this make any sense? This is the future. This is the part of the future of the industry. How do you say, okay, this is the future, we're gonna not have it on our platform? Imagine 10 years ago, Apple saying, you know what? There's no Netflix on the App Store. This is crazy. We don't wanna be a part of streaming video.
It's very simple. Somebody posted an article. I have to find it. It showcased Apple's revenue last year for just gaming apps. It was $22 billion. That alone tells you everything.
Yes.
That is just the definition of why. I think Game Pass is going to come on iOS at some point. But they're trying to...
It has to.
They're trying to figure out how either... Because most likely Microsoft is going to ask for 15%. In terms of a percentage cut, Amazon gets 15. We know that. Documents came out.
Yes.
Apple has to either decide the future of the App Store and how they charge people, because that's where they make a bulk of their money. It's not the hardware. It's literally services. And services meaning just taking a 30% cut. So they have to solve what they want to do, because if Microsoft comes in and more information leaks out, then a lot of people are going to start complaining and say, hey, look, give us 15%. So they either have to come out and say it's a 15% cut. And then they also have to decide what they want to do with gaming themselves. Because Apple has done this little foot and dance racing to gaming left and right. And in a sense, they're taking a step backwards with the new MacBooks. The A14 chipsets, I'm sorry, I don't care what anyone says, will not play games as well as Apple may tout. It's going to be a difficult road to get there, because we understand with gaming, there's a CPU, GPU equipment, and the GPU side of things really plays a lot. So it's going to take a while for that to happen. But they do well on iOS. iOS games run well. They're great. But they've done well with Apple Arcade. That's one thing I do like. It's how do they now make that a viable competitor to Game Pass? Because people are going to pay $15, but they're getting console games or even PC-like games on their phones. How do you equate that? I think it's just a matter of them figuring out and also waiting and seeing, because Apple doesn't necessarily jump in. I mean, we know that, right? So even though Microsoft was trying to say, hey, look, we want to launch this stuff, it's still wise for Apple to say, no, we're not going to let it go on. Let's actually see how well Game Pass does between now and next iPhone launch next year. And yeah. then, or maybe by developer conference, we say, oh yeah, you know, we worked with Microsoft and we've done some things and we added a few features and all that kind of stuff. Because also, again, games like Fortnite with microtransactions, which probably will eventually become come on Game Pass, or even PUBG, which is up there, it's going to be hard for them to gain that revenue from microtransactions, which they already do now on, you know, the App Store.
Right. What Microsoft's actually done is, if you download Game Pass from the Play Store, there's no microtransactions in the games. If you download it from, I believe, the Galaxy Store, mm-hmm. then you can get microtransactions in the games because Samsung doesn't take a percentage. It seems like a very simple thing that can be solved here, because a lot of people will bring up Apple Arcade and other things. But yeah. the thing here, the main thing is Apple Arcade, you download your games and you play them. Right? Xbox Game Pass is you're at the airport hanging out and you're like, hey, let me just fire up whatever Halo Master Chief Collection. You don't have to download 100 gigabytes to play yeah. Master Chief Collection. You just stream it. This is two totally different things. There's no correlation between the two. All you have to do is allow people. And by the way, most people, when they subscribe to Game Pass, they do it on their Xbox. It's so
That's how I did it.
Baffling to think that this is about 15 to 30%, because even if Apple said we need 30% of anyone who subscribes to Game Pass through the App Store, most people aren't doing that. They're doing it on their Xbox. I don't know. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, I definitely hear you. I think it's one of those things where Apple is playing the game of wait and see. You know, it's kind of like even on the smartphone side, 5G, you know, there's rumor now that they may miss some 5G targets, things like that. Because mm-hmm. for them, doesn't matter what it is, they have to see how the market is or the market's going, and then they will adjust. The thing is that Apple also knows they have really good marketing. They can spin this. Because I remember, think about it with the fight with Epic and how it spun away from Epic. So put it this way, gamers are siding with Epic and iPhone fans or Apple fans are siding more with Apple. That's just the breakdown I've seen for most people in general. It's not a simple battle. But then a few weeks later, we saw that Apple almost took off WordPress. And then they had the thing with Facebook where most people sided with Apple, but I'm blaming Facebook, but it was really Apple's fault because Facebook said, look, we're hosting something. We want to make sure that we don't charge people because this is for donations and, you know, it's trying to help small businesses. And Apple's like, we still want to take 30% cut. And Facebook's like, all right, fine, let's just tell people that you're taking that cut, not us. Because Facebook is already evil into so many people's minds, yep. right? So Facebook is like, we don't want to add the extra evilness on top. And that's the battle that Apple has to look at and say, how do we set this up? But they have good marketing to mend those fences once they turn around and go, okay, we're doing this. And everyone's like, oh, that's great. You know, so.
Yeah, there's a reckoning coming one way or another. Either Apple's gonna win or developers are going to get the shift that they've been wanting. But the App Store as it stands today, I do not see it staying as is, looking the same 1 or 2 years from now. I think changes are afoot. But let's, I'm going to digress. I'm going to digress from this topic. I need to bring my blood pressure down. John, you, sir, have been using the Microsoft Surface Duo.
We're shifting. Look at that. Smooth. I was getting ready to rant on Epic and you're just shifting right there. All right, go ahead. Shift away.
We're shifting to the Microsoft Surface Duo. We talked about it last week with Jenna, or I did. It was prior to the review units going out, though, so we didn't have any hands-on impressions. Now, I have not gotten one in, but you have.
I do. And I have hands-on impressions.
You can only tell us about how the hardware feels. have the quality of the build. You cannot talk about anything about how it works.
I cannot talk about software, despite you being able to go to many, many retail locations and play with one software included and film those opinions. I cannot discuss anything about software, but I can discuss everything else that has to do with the Surface Duo. So,
okay, so before we take a break, just break this down for us. Tell us, Surface Duo hardware, how are you feeling about it?
I think that this is one of the first new category of devices that we've seen in a very long time. Completely new category of what a device can be. I'm not going to call it a phone. I'm not going to call it a tablet. It is something very different and perhaps in between all of those things.
It's not a phone. You're not going to call it a phone or a tablet.
I'm not going to call it a phone or a tablet. And it's hard because, again, my hands are tied a little bit for what I can say. But let me say this. The hardware is outstanding. The hinge on this is probably one of the coolest technological innovations that I've seen in many, many years of reviewing technology. The fact that this hinge can go so smoothly 360 degrees or just about and stop in any location is amazing, is absolutely amazing. So I think Microsoft is very, very, very on to something with this. And I think they have a history of showing something cool and early and knowing it's not for everybody and then tweaking it to Gen 2 and Gen 3 when it comes close to perfect. You look at the recipe for the original Surface Pro, you could see that that was going to be something really cool, even if it wasn't there at first generation. Yeah. And hardware-wise, it seems like the Duo is probably following that same path. I think Microsoft realizes that and knows this device is not going to be for everybody. Now, having said that, I do have some hardware issues with it. The hinge, while amazing, it's two separate screens. So there's a gap in the middle, not just bezels. There's a visible light gap in the middle.
Oh, okay.
So if you're doing anything on those screens that maybe you want to pan both screens, there is going to be that gap there that's present in the middle. And I think perhaps that might turn somebody off, but sort of harken back to why I think this is a different category of device and how I think Microsoft, at least, doesn't view this as a phone. Normal phone things aren't here. But let me ask you guys, would you expect your laptop to have wireless charging?
No.
Would you expect your tablet to have wireless charging?
No.
Do you expect your tablet or laptop to have an IP rating?
Not necessarily.
I see where you're going. I see where you're going with this.
I mean, you see the point I'm making. You know, same point perhaps about some laptops and NFC. The things that are missing from this, and this isn't necessarily my opinion, but I think that's how Microsoft views it, is that this is not a phone. It's something that's different and perhaps is made to be used in conjunction with a phone. And that's where I think that this is a new category of device that is very, very interesting and will be interesting to a lot of people.
It's interesting you mentioned that. And I think that's, I kind of view that as a first gen failure. It's not a bad thing, but I think something they should add second gen. I consider this a personal computing device, like what the word says, not necessarily a PC. This, you know, I'm sure you remember this when Microsoft, when the rumors, this was like 7-8 years ago of the Microsoft Courier. Yeah. And I'm sure this is where this was born from. And this reminds me of every sci-fi show I love from Westworld. The idea of having a computing device that is multifaceted, right? Which is why I still believe things like NFC should be in there because we live in a world that is multifaceted. A IP rating, maybe not so much. Maybe splash resistance or something like that, right? Wireless charging, probably, yeah. Because again, and again, not for the third generation. I don't care about this for this device, but hopefully they think down the line because I can see myself walking around with this device alone because now we move to true wireless earbuds. So having a phone call on a phone is not necessarily picking up to your ear anymore. It's about having, you know, the right kind of Bluetooth connectivity. So I think they should look at it as more of a personal computing in that pseudo sci-fi arena of our device can cover many worlds or two different worlds at least as they move forward.
There's a lot of interesting things and a lot of interesting points you made that you made as well. So I had a chance to actually ask Microsoft about the lack of some of these things. And particularly I asked about wireless charging and NFC because those, at least to me, in my perspective, initially viewing this as a phone seemed like big omissions. And they said they really were striving for thinness on the device and symmetry on the device. So anything they added to one side had to be added to the other. So any millimeters or micrometers of material added on one side for NFC or wireless charging had to be added to the other side as well, so that it could be charged no matter which way you had it or how you were holding it. And they said the same thing for NFC, and they said all those micrometers started to add up. So whether you think it's right or wrong, that's at least the reasoning for why things like that were omitted. Now, if you were to identify a couple of things that seem like obvious things to be fixed for Gen 2, I think that's obvious. That's clearly where you would start, you know, aside from bezels and processor.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think even to the processor side, though, granted, we know it's the 855 in there, I don't think it needs to be like the top of the line 865 or 875 next year, whatever the case may be. You know, I think something like the next gen of the 700 series will probably work well on that device. My biggest fear, though, is Android. I'm a big Android user. I love Android, but I love Android from a manufacturer standpoint, because Google does not know how to manage its own software well. And when it comes to anything bigger than a phone, we're going to talk about the Galaxy Z Fold 2 and the things that Samsung is trying to do there. But when it goes to devices that are not phones, Google doesn't know how to do anything with tablets. We know that. Then you're talking about two screens. That's a little too much. And then you're talking about one that folds. You're going, okay, I don't know what they're going to do. So that's my biggest fear. And I hope Microsoft is willing to put in the work in that department. Kind of like how Samsung did in the early days of Android, because a lot of the Android features that we enjoy today came from Samsung, LG, and HTC. Those are the three main people who brought a lot of features to Android. So hopefully Microsoft is thinking that way, because I think that's the next step for these type of devices.
Yes.
I don't disagree. I can't really comment too much on any of that, but I think your points are very fair.
Yes. And hey, we know software is still under embargo, but I think that was a good overview of your thoughts and all of our collective thoughts. We're going to take a break, though. And after the break, we're going to talk about something that we are allowed to talk about in any way that we'd like to.
Oof. That was a tough tightrope to walk right there.
The Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 2, and I am extremely intrigued to hear about what John thinks about this device that he's been talking about nonstop.
I got opinions.
For the past year.
I got opinions. Coming up opinions.
Next on Geared Up. Welcome back to Geared Up, brought to you by National Car Rental. I'm Andrew Edwards, and it is now time for the National Car Rental Story of the Week. As you know, Geared Up is sponsored by National Car Rental. And if you don't know, I also do a show with National Car Rental on YouTube called Technically Speaking, where I bring you the latest, my picks for the best tech for business travel. Whether you're business traveling or even whether you're going for leisure travel, there's a lot of tech out there that can make your travel more efficient or even more fun. You can check these episodes out at the nationalcar.com control center or go to youtube.com/nationalcarrent. The latest tech puts you in the driver's seat. National Car Rental's Emerald Club will keep you there. Once again, big thank you to National Car Rental for sponsoring Geared Up. All right, National Car Rental story of the week. The three of us were part of the group that were sent the new Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 2. It is available for pre-order right now. It's $2,000 plus tax, if you live in a place that has tax. And it is released generally to the public on September 18th. We've been using them for a few days now. And this is a device that John's been talking about for a long time.
John, before you get into it,
I want to say just something real quick. As most people listening know, if you listen to us for a while, I was not the biggest fan of the original Fold. I didn't really see the reason to pay what they were asking. I didn't see a lot of utility in it. I felt it was extremely fragile. The Galaxy Z Flip, I thought, was just fine. Like, the whole point is you can fold it, but once it's unfolded, it's no different than any other phone out there. Once it's unfolded, it's just a normal phone. Yes, you can fold it in half and set it up on something to take a selfie, but not a big deal. Not worth the money, in my opinion. From using the Galaxy Z Fold 2 for the past few days, my opinion is this is the first and only foldable smartphone that lives up to the promise of what this form factor can be. I'm actually extremely impressed. I don't know if it's worth $2,000 to the average consumer, but I can see why it costs $2,000 to sell this phone. It is a premium, high quality experience. John, what do you think?
I've been waiting for this. I've been prepping for this.
He's crying. I've been
building to this. And those listening can't see this, but the three of us can all see each other on camera. And in my hand, I have a first gen Fold, and I have the Fold 2. And I'm not going to call it the Galaxy Z Fold 2 if I have you think the name is stupid. I'm just going to call it the Fold 2. Just getting that part out of the way before people yell at me that I pronounced it wrong or said it wrong. I think, and if you are the most hardcore iOS Apple fanboy, this phone is such a marvel of engineering and execution that any fan of technology should be cheering for it to be a success. Even if people choose to not spend their money on it, because it is very expensive and still not for everybody. But it is one of those few devices that I think the price justifies what it does. I can see why it costs $2,000 or less if you decide to trade it in. It is very expensive, and I think the price will ultimately come down. But the original promise of the Fold, of being able to have a usable outside screen and open it up and have a tablet experience, is finally realized. The problems with the original Galaxy Fold, you can almost check off each one that they solved with the Fold 2. Really crappy outer screen? Check. It's now 6.2 inches. Its aspect ratio is super weird. It's like one of those Sony phones that are tall and thin, but very usable, great for watching video, high resolution AMOLED display, amazing. The very weird notch in the upper right-hand corner, the lower refresh rate screen, not using their Infinity O technology, not having their ultra-thin glass, all that stuff. Check, 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 check. And on beyond that, they made the inner screen bigger, right? It's now 7.6 inches. Mm-hmm. Which puts it almost exactly the same size as an iPad mini, which now you can put in your pocket. It changes the way you use phones. The build quality, the issues with the first one at the hinge have been fixed here. You can now sort of open it up at almost any angle that you want to, and it will stay there. It is an absolutely amazing, beautiful piece of hardware. And even if you are never going to buy it, cheer for it to be a success. So other manufacturers will see this and be inspired by it. And I think as Samsung and Apple tend to go, the rest of the industry tends to go. And if people start buying this or adopting it, we'll see prices ultimately come down. Third generation is generally where you see cheaper prices. And if they were going to focus on anything for Gen 3, I would say thin it down. It's still quite a thick boy. Ignore the S Pen for another year. Let the S Pen wait until 4. Thin it down and find some way to get the price down. Even $200, or have a less expensive version with maybe an outdated chipset, the 855 Plus. Once this price comes down to an accessible price point, which sounds even crazy to say, like $1,500 is accessible, because it's still a ton of money, people will realize the value of this form factor. And I think we'll start to flock to it.
Dinabong, where you at?
I mean, I was a fan of the first one. People were yelling at me on Twitter for for liking this device, because a lot of people in tech are very short-sighted and they don't know their history. When I saw this device and I used it, I remember, I believe you were at the briefing I was at, John, yeah. It reminded me of my first briefing with the Galaxy Note. These are the two devices that
absolutely
that changed my tech experience, especially in smartphones. Because I remember the Galaxy Note. The S Pen was like using a giant pencil that just couldn't really correlate well. But for me, I knew if Samsung continued, we would have the Galaxy Notes that we have today. And it was kind of the same thing. And yeah, I agree. The display was way too small. But I love the fact that when I took it on a trip, I remember doing this on the plane. I opened it up and I started watching the movie. The guy behind me, the guy next to me, and the lady on my right were like, "What is that?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's a phone, and it's the Galaxy Fold." And it was just that impression. And to all the things that John said, is the fact that we have something that is a phone and a tablet. And I've heard people say, "Well, what can you do that's special? What's even special with the software?" And I say, besides any of that, the fact that I have a phone and a tablet in one device is enough and almost guarantees the price. And I would even say that for the first version, yes, that was with a lot of kinks here and there where you could say mm-hmm. you know what? Okay, that's cool. But this, again, you've got a phone with a 6.3-inch display that is also super bright, by the way, if anyone has noticed that. It is really bright. And then you've got 120 hertz display for the internal main display, which is absolutely fantastic. And they've added all these features. And for me, what I'm just hoping for is a better adoption. And I think it sold quite well anyway for the first round, but also better adoption for software. I want to see software manufacturers take advantage of it in terms of apps and things like that on the device, where you start thinking of different ways to use your device. That's the kind of thing I would like to see from it. But overall, I love it. I want the S Pen next year because I'm a Note user, and this would just literally solve it for me. Now, if they put the S Pen outside, you know what, with a magnet, I'll take it. I'll still take it, even though I'm going to lose it, but I'll take it.
Man, S Pen worries me on the inner display with that ultra-thin glass.
Same.
But yeah, what if the S Pen worked only on the cover display? Disappointing or like, is that good?
It's a step, right?
It's a step, but I would say then don't release it. Just don't. I follow John's idea and wait till Gen 4 and give us the S Pen for both devices. Because I think even for Samsung, though, with some of the rumors you're hearing, they're trying to thin out the lines where the Note and the S is now one line, and then the Z line becomes the, you know, it's just a foldable line altogether. So,
okay. Now, John, you said something interesting midweek that I wanted to bring up. We were talking about these devices, and you said to me, you're not sure if you're going to buy one. So we have these are our review units. So just so people understand, Samsung sends these to us so that we can get used to it, feel it out, review them, make our videos, write articles, whatever it might be, talk about it on the podcast. But these go back. Yes. So we send these back to the company. And you said you weren't sure if after sending it back, if you would buy one for yourself, and that left me scratching my head. And I didn't want to ask you at that point to explain yourself, because I wanted to ask you here. So everything you said seemed very positive. What is it that holds you back from purchasing this as someone who bought the original?
I should say that pre-orders went live at midnight 2 days ago, and I already have ordered one. So let me just put that out there. Now, my biggest debate was whether or not to wait the 5 weeks to get a custom color hinge or not, which I ultimately decided not to do. I didn't. I wanted it right away. I wanted the black with the red hinge. I thought that looked pretty sweet.
Oh, but, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't want to wait the 5 weeks. You know, honestly, that was me being like, oh, it's a lot of money. I haven't really used this one yet. I don't want to fall in love, because once I use their unit, I know I'm going to drop a lot of money on it. And it's still $2,000. It's still like a lot of money.
Yeah.
Ultimately, though, I justified it in my head. I was like, well, I'm going to make videos on this for a year. So I'm like, I need it, right? It'll pay for itself. That's sort of how I foolishly justified it. And then I ordered one. I did trade in another device, though, to sort of drive the cost down a little bit. But yeah, I copped one. I didn't have much of a choice.
Okay. You bought it.
I did.
And Abong, did you buy one?
Not yet, but I am thinking of getting one with custom colors. So I will wait. I will wait for that. I think I will get one, because I have one myself of the original. And the only thing I'll say, though, is I will agree with John, though. It is a big boy. It needs to be a little bit, like, the original feels lighter compared to this one, just in weight. So it needs to trim down just a bit so that, you know.
This one, for me, I don't know, maybe it's the weight, but I feel like it feels more substantial in a positive way. Like, I don't feel like the first one, I always felt like I had to baby it. Like, I felt like I couldn't just treat it like a phone. I felt like I'm going to mess it up somehow, so I have to be really careful. And with the Fold 2, I just don't feel that way. I just feel like I'm kind of carrying around a little bit thicker Galaxy Note.
I mean, can we say that we've had this device for 3 days and screens haven't peeled That's off true. Yet? Nothing's gotten stuck under a screen. They're not asking for them back yet immediately. I mean, we're already significantly steps ahead.
That's true.
From where we were, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, there's also a screen protector on the internal screen as well on top of that. Which
there is, and they were like, it says outside, don't remove it.
Right. Actually, if you want to have it removed, you have to take it to a Samsung Experience store, mm-hmm. and they can remove it for you, which is that's just
not
weird.
Actually, no, not necessarily, because I think, again, most people don't understand how delicate that display is. because the way, trust me, the way we all remove screen protectors are different. Like once you stop peeling it out, it's going to force it up. Remember, there's a thin layer of glass, which, I mean, that the glass is micromillimeters thin or thick, if you will, right?
Yep.
So it's something that you have to apply some level of caution, unless you're, you know, you're Zach, where you can sit down and break that down. If not, it's just going to be a hot mess.
Yes. Hey, John.
Yep.
So we talked about the Z Fold 2. Yeah. You gave us your impressions of the Surface Duo.
Are we going to talk about things that are also expensive that we don't need?
No. I just had no, because we only have a few minutes left here. So, but one thing that I wanted to ask you, without you having to talk about software, which you're not allowed to do yet.
Yes.
Would you buy a Surface Duo? So just so people know, again, the Galaxy Z Fold 2, $2,000. The Surface Duo starts at, is it $1,300?
$1,299? $1,400, I believe, for the
Duo. $1,400. So $600 less. Would that be a phone or whatever you want to call it, tablet, phone, Surface, that you would spend money on?
So I need to preface that answer with, I believe very firmly in supporting first generation devices that are imperfect, because we get to the perfection in Gens 2 and 3. And I think there have to be people out there who are willing to purchase an imperfect device for the sake of the greater good in Gens 2 and 3. So having said that, I cannot answer your question because software is a very important part of that. And my answer, either yes, I would buy one, or no, I won't, I think lends itself to my feelings on the software.
Mm. Okay. Okay. So what you're saying is next week, you'll answer that question.
I will answer it. And I have concrete examples of things that I tested on the Duo to sort of experience the software prowess or lack thereof from what it could do or not do, and if it lived up to the promise and the hype. And I will say, and what I can say, is that using the Duo made me increasingly excited for the forgotten Surface Neo that was also announced, which, if you remember, runs Windows.
Yes.
And Windows, last time I checked, is Windows and is meant to be windowed. And with a flip-up keyboard on the back, it's dual screen. Made me very excited for future form factors that utilize the awesome sort of hinge technology that we have in the Duo.
Perfect. Well, hey, we got to get out of here.
We out.
Enabong, Thunder E, thank you so much for joining us this
week. Thank you for having me here.
Lending us your expertise. Let people know where they can find you if they want to check you out on social or YouTube.
It's very simple. I am on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook. It is all Bored at Work, spelled with two O's.
There it is.
And I do want to say, I do want to thank you for talking gaming with Andrew. I feel like he misses it every week with me here. So thank you for being the surrogate gaming host.
Yeah.
No problem. Anytime.
And that is it for this edition of Geared Up. Thank you so much for listening. Of course, you can catch John and I on YouTube. I'm at youtube.com/gearlive. And John is at youtube.com/John4Lakers. Feel free to head over and subscribe to our channels to stay up to date on all the latest tech. Speaking of subscribing, you can subscribe to Geared Up in your favorite podcast app if you haven't done so already. Just search Geared Up, that's two words, not one, in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Overcast, or really wherever you choose to listen. If you like what we do, please consider leaving us a rating and review. It really helps other people find the show. Geared Up is a Gear Live podcast, and you can see more from us at gearlive.com. Thank you so much for listening. For John Rettinger, I'm Andrew Edwards, and we'll catch you in the next episode.